It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. And please stick around, because at the end of this, Fred will chat with Scott Pianowski of Yahoo Sports, and they are going to answer some questions for you as well. We have a lot of closer news to get to. We'll get to that in a while. But we also have plenty of other stuff to talk about, and we are going to start with the Twins, who are one of the most entertaining and exciting teams going right now, and they have some definite fantasy issues, questions, things to wonder about. And we start with Miguel Sano, of whom I am an enormous fan. He is just one of my favorite players. I love his raw power. I've enjoyed following him since he was really young. He's also been a little iffy since the break. He has not been the same sort of destroyer of worlds that he was in the first half. I am still a full believer in Sano. Do you have any concerns? Are there any scenarios where maybe you're willing to part with him?
No, I think I would stash him in pretty much any league, unless we get other information on him in the next week or two that he's going to be out longer than we expect. But I would stash him in pretty much every league. I think that you're right, and he has been down a little bit. He has a 775 OPS since the All-Star break. Pretty, not very exciting, especially for a power hitter. At the same time, we have to recognize that there's an ebb and a flow to every player's season. And, a 775 OPS isn't terrible. He could have had a hot stretch coming up and pushed that up into the mid-800s, even with just five good days or something like that. So I think you have to hang on to him unless you're, way out in front in your power categories.
It's also possible, and you wouldn't want to hang a whole lot on this, but it's possible. This is a guy who has, right now, is just about at his career high in games played in a major league season. He played 116 last year, 80 in his first year of 2015. He's at 111 now. I'm not going to say something silly like an injury being a good thing, but I think it is possible that being down for a little while, if he comes back as quickly as we hope, could be valuable. It is entirely possible that a little break here for Sano could refresh him and he could come back stronger. You wouldn't assume it, but I think it's at least possible.
Yeah, I totally agree. And Sano is the kind of player who has the raw power where when he comes back, assuming he's not rushed back because the Twins are in the race and, assuming he's totally healthy, he's the kind of player who can go on a massive power binge. He's just that kind of guy who could get you, if you stash him, he's the kind of guy who could get you a four-homer week.
For sure. Staying with the Twins, Byron Buxton, he's one of those guys that I think we all have to acknowledge that we have thought that maybe Byron Buxton has arrived before. This is not the first time we've thought that. With that said, there's a pretty extended stretch of time. It coincides with some adjustments he's made. I believe our own Mike Petriello wrote about this recently. And so I think there is at least reason to hope that this is a little different this time. Are you buying Buxton?
Yeah, I am buying him more than I had previously. I'm starting to come around on him. I've always been, I find, a bit the low man on him, a little bit of a, I'll believe it when I see it kind of thing. And so far that hasn't burned me. Right now, though, I'm starting to buy in. And the reason I'm buying in is that his strikeout rate is getting a little better. He's still not, he's probably never going to be, a great contact hitter, someone who doesn't strike out often. But that strikeout rate is starting to skew towards from really bad to just kind of bad. And that could make all the difference for someone with his skill set, because he's that player who can, get you some home runs, can steal a lot of bases. I mean, if he's hitting, just getting some hits, he could be right there among the league leading base stealers. So because the strikeout rate's a little better, I think this is a chance for owners to buy in. Matthew, would you want to own him probably in any league right now?
I would think so. I mean, I'm not necessarily dropping somebody I'm happy with to pick him up. But if nearly every roster has some sort of dead weight, I'd drop dead weight to take a chance on him.
Yeah, I'll say this, in a head-to-head league with three outfielders, in a point like a points head-to-head league, then I wouldn't rush out to get him, because the base stealers tend to not be quite as valuable in those formats. Three outfielders would be pretty tough for him to crack. Although he is the kind of high upside guy who could get into a lineup like that if he gets really hot. But I'd say in any roto league, those steals are just so valuable that as long as he's not striking out too often and gives you a decent batting average. And this is someone who, because he's so fast, if he's just putting the ball in play enough, can probably give you a decent batting average.
Yep. Manny Machado, and I actually wrote about this this week, shameless plug, had a little StatCast piece on Manny Machado, has been the guy we expect him to be recently. And a lot of it has come from plate discipline, has come from swinging at strikes and laying off pitches out of the zone. His power was more or less there all along, and it's where we expected. He has really planted a superstar level since about the beginning of July. Josh Donaldson has also come on very strong, and I don't know that he's at quite the same level. And, you know, we talked about this when we talked about these two guys earlier, and I think that there are natural reasons to pair them together. They have been first-round caliber third basemen in the same division in recent years. But I think, you know, we made the point the last time we talked about them that I think is still worth remembering, is that there's a difference in age here, and there's probably a difference in ceiling, even looking at Donaldson as a former MVP. So, you know, I kind of want to spin this forward with these guys and look ahead to next year, because to me, the difference and the question is, where do these rebounds put these guys for you next year? And to me, there is a difference, because if Machado keeps this up, Machado keeps raking through the end of the year, I'm pretty willing to view him about like I did coming into this year, which is really, really highly. Donaldson keeps hitting to the end of the year. I still dock him a little bit because he's on the wrong side of 30, the whole year, I guess my point is, I think the whole year is going to be a fairer representation of Donaldson in 2018 than the whole year is of Machado in 2018. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I think so. I think that you have to give Donaldson that dock penalty of age. I also think with Donaldson, when he had those two glory years with the Blue Jays, he was in a really, really good lineup. I mean, the first time he was in, I think, the highest scoring lineup in baseball. And the second year, still a very good lineup. And now, not so much. And we don't know what that lineup will look like next year. I think it's one that may not be great next year. So I think that matters with him because of the age, too. Like, you're looking for those extra factors like supporting cast. Now, Donaldson's been amazing this month. I just looked it up, and his OPS this month is basically 250 points higher than Machado. So Donaldson has 11 homers and 24 RBI already in August. So, I mean, he's been awesome this month. Machado's been great. I'm borderline on Machado as a first-round pick next year. I think I'm out on Donaldson as a first-round pick. I think his inconsistency this year, his age, his supporting cast has me viewing him more as a mid to late second, maybe even a third round pick next year. We'll see how the Blue Jays look. But Machado, I think I am willing to go up to maybe a first round pick. I'm not totally there yet, but I've been thinking about what the first round next year looks like. I think he's around there, and if he's not, he's definitely an early second rounder.
I think that the way you sort of put them in contrast to each other is exactly where I am between one being borderline and one being not a first rounder. Now, you know, I think you kind of hinted at this. It is entirely possible if you get Josh Donaldson down late second, early third next year, you're going to be real happy with that, but you also might not. So, Keon Broxton has been one of the most maddening players in fantasy this year. He has been all over the place. He has been hot at times. He's been just awful at times. And we get to the end of the year, and I think there's a hesitation to put him in that kind of Chris Davis category. Not that he's a player like Chris Davis, but, you know, Chris Davis is a guy where, Chris with a C, and we've talked about this, where you just know you have to ride it out. And at the end of the year, there's going to be some variation in his performance, but ultimately you're going to get hot streaks and you just have to ride it out. And what I wonder with Broxton is, we don't have nearly the track record, but is he that kind of player? Is he a guy where, I mean, obviously if he gets sent down, you don't ride it out, but, you know, is he a guy where that power-speed combination, even with the low batting average and even with the slumps, is enough that when you, and I think mostly we're talking about next year at this point, if you draft him, if you pick him up for next year, is he a guy where you just say, look, sometimes he's going to look really lousy, I'm going to ride it out because the highs are valuable enough?
Yeah, I think so. I think the difference between Broxton right now and the guys like Davis is that Broxton's playing time just isn't as secure. The he hasn't had a team. He hasn't had that monster maybe breakthrough season where a team then commits to him and says, you know, we're going to ride those ups and downs with you throughout the season. You're going to keep playing all the time. I'd love to see him get to that point, whether it's with the Brewers or eventually with someone else, but I'd love to see him get to that point. And I think because of the downs with him, I think owners don't give him enough credit. Like, he's someone in Yahoo leagues who's still available in more than half of leagues. And for owners who are either way out in front in batting average or way behind in batting average or just in a gap somewhere in batting average, like, how can you turn down someone who could spend some, will have spent some time in the minors this season and could end up being a 25-25 player? Like, that's really hard to leave on waivers in any kind of roto league. So I think for some owners, he's your perfect fix for this down the stretch, but you just have to monitor his playing time and make sure if he slumps a bit that they're leaving him in the lineup.
Chris Granderson goes from the Mets to the Dodgers, and I mean, that's certainly an upgrade in lineup, but you know, I think it's a fair question just how much of an upgrade in opportunity it's going to be. I mean, for the next couple of weeks here, but you know, I gotta wonder, come September, isn't Jock Peterson gonna play at least some? I mean, I understand they're sending Jock down, and Jock's gonna play in AAA, but when rosters expand, Jock's gonna be back. Isn't he gonna play at least some? I mean, I feel like Granderson is a really short-term play if you want to ride this hot streak and think this is a guy who is going to play regularly. Do you see this differently than I do?
I'm a little more optimistic. I think so. Mike Petriello, who, you know, we all know well from all of his Statcast work for MLB.com, he was pushing hard, I know, the last couple weeks before Granderson was traded, just trying to show people how well Granderson has been playing. And then that really got me thinking more about it. And since the beginning of May, Granderson has a 937 OPS, which is like really good. And Peterson hasn't been hitting well. I think Granderson basically has a few more days. He's off to a decent start. He's already hit a couple home runs as a member of the Dodgers. I think he's got a few more days, and then early until September and rosters expand, and then maybe even a little time early in September to prove to the Dodgers that he needs to be in the lineup all the time, and maybe Peterson is just a bench player for them for the rest of the season. I think it's possible that Granderson can hold him off. I think you get Granderson now, you use him for another week, at least when they're playing right-handers, and then you just monitor it that first week of September or as soon as they bring Peterson up and see kind of how the playing time's falling. We also know with Granderson that he's someone who can hit 3 home runs in a week, and he's also someone who could go 0-for-4 for 4 or 5 straight games. So that's why he often has a low batting average. So I don't mind riding it out in the short term. I would pick him up, though, if I needed a power-hitting outfielder maybe in a 12-team league.
We move to starting pitchers, and Max Scherzer not going to be back quite as quickly as expected. This still seems like ultimately a pretty minor thing. This is a team that is in very safe postseason shape, so they're not in any real rush to bring Scherzer back. I would note that, and this is I think we've already talked about this, it is an interesting question that the Nats face, two interesting questions that the Nats face, that they've got these two guys who, on the one hand, there is no rush to get them back for competitive reasons. On the other hand, they're both contending for really big awards. Scherzer is a Cy Young candidate. Harper is an MVP candidate. So, you know, I know that factors in, at least in Dusty Baker's mind, because that's the way a veteran manager is going to think. He wants to take care of his horses and see them get opportunities to get big awards. This is a very long setup for a question about Max Scherzer, because the question is, what is your expectation in the very short term? Is he back in 5 days after his most recent skipped start, or is it another week? And I think it's, even with that Cy Young consideration, even with that desire to get him going before the postseason, I think my inclination is I might hold off. I don't know. I wouldn't tell you you were wrong if you wanted to take that shot. But the other thing is, I think if he comes back, he's not going to go 120 his first time back, I don't think. I think that his first start back from this thing, this seems to have nagged him a little bit in recent weeks, beyond just this time that he's out right now. You know, I think they'll probably have an earlier-than-usual hook for him. So I think I would lean on the side of hold off till we know. But I also think that if you said, look, I can't take that risk, I respect that, where would you be if you had Scherzer in a weekly transaction league?
Yeah, I think I'm going to start him next week. And I know he commented, it's interesting that you mentioned how long they'll let him go, and we'll see what they decide. He commented that he had that 10-pitch start at the beginning of August against the Marlins, and then he was delayed a little bit. And his next time out, they let him throw 114 pitches. And then the next time out, they let him throw 107, and then he wound up on the disabled list, and that's where we're at right now. The upside of Scherzer is just so high. Like, even if he throws six innings, he could strike out nine batters, something like that, and get a win, and that's so valuable that I'm probably leaving him in my lineup. He's definitely probably the number one player in baseball to monitor this weekend, whereas if he throws a bullpen session this weekend and it goes fine, then I'm putting him in my lineup. If he doesn't throw a bullpen session at all this weekend, then I'm hesitating a little more, and I own Scherzer in a league that's quite important to me, and so I know firsthand that what's really troubling his owners right now is in those weekly leagues, he's burned you now for two straight weeks because he had the week where he was supposed to start, and then he went on the DL. So you got a complete zero that week from that spot. And then this week, if you left him in, then you got another zero. And if you're in a tight race for wins and strikeouts, it would be really hard to absorb a zero 3 weeks in a row from the same, you know, pitching spot in your lineup, because probably other things haven't gone perfectly at other spots as well. So that's the one reason where I could see benching him, is if you just can't afford another zero.
John Lester, Alex Wood, either of those guys, you are at a point where you'd part with them yet?
I don't think so. I think I have to keep both of them. I think with Wood especially, unless we find out there's a long timetable, he's just pitched so effectively this season that I have to keep him. And Lester hasn't pitched effectively this season, but, I mean, you've talked about this with some other players, with Bryce Harper and earlier with Lance McCullers and things like that. Unless I hear that Lester's out, you know, till late September, to me, he's too high on my pitching totem pole for me to walk away from him and put him out to waivers. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I think that's perfectly reasonable. I mean, I think we're down at the sort of pointy end of the season that I can see scenarios where you just don't have the roster spot and you need something else. But I'm sure not looking for a reason to drop either of those guys. And this may not have been exactly what you were saying, but I think I'm with you that I would have a little harder time parting with Lester than with Wood. Even as good as Wood has been, I do worry a little about that workload and about fatigue and about what he's going to be like when he comes back.
Yeah, I understand that. And Wood has been more just good than great in the second half. Like, he was great in the first half. In the second half, he's been fine, but not amazing. And Lester, as bad as his numbers look, like a four, it's hard to say that you're going to stash a pitcher with a 4.37 ERA. But then when you look at the whole picture of it, like, he was so good in previous seasons with the Cubs. The Cubs are really rolling. He did have an ERA in the high threes before hit that last start where he really struggled and then wound up on the DL. So, I mean, the strikeout rate's fine. I think that you have to, I just think you have to keep Lester.
Luke Weaver looking really good. I think I am on board here. I mean, he gets extra points for me for being a Florida State guy. But I think I'm on board. I think I like what I've seen. I know you like him. How high are you on him?
Yeah, I've been pushing fantasy owners to pick Weaver up all week. And every forum that I get to talk about him or advertise him, I've been pushing people to pick him up. I just think that this season, and I've only made, just for the record, I've made some dent, I feel like, in getting people. His ownership percentage has risen from about 10% to about 30% in Yahoo leagues this week. So that's good progress, especially after he pitched so well last night. But there's still a long way to go. For me, he kind of checks all the boxes. Like, he's a fairly reputable prospect. He's not like a Lucas Giolito type where he was at the top of the pipeline list at any point, but I feel like he's had a good label from scouts over the years. He's in an organization that typically does fine for pitching. He's in the National League. He's got a nice home park. And I feel like all along, and he has great numbers in the PCL this year, and I felt like all along that he just needs an extended opportunity in the rotation, and then he'll be anywhere from, you know, decent to really good, somewhere in there, somewhere in the threes for his ERA. And I think that's going to happen. And so many owners could use a starting pitcher. I just think this is someone that I would add him in any league. Like, I wouldn't drop John Lester for him, but I'm going to guess that most owners have someone they can drop to pick him up.
How much does their just utter chaos in the late innings worry you with not just him, but really any Cardinals pitcher we would talk about?
It worries me a little bit. At the same time, like, there's a handful of teams that we could say that about that have, you know, whether we're talking about, well, I guess you're not going to look at many Reds or White Sox pitchers, but even Phillies pitchers and things like that. There's a few teams that I feel that way about, but I think first and foremost, especially this late in the season, I'm just looking to get quality starts from my pitcher in the first place. So, and St. Louis is a team, even with all the chaos in the bullpen, that's, you know, they're winning enough of their games to stay in that postseason race. I know they're a little on the outside of it, but they're in the race enough that they're going to be playing competitive baseball into September. So, and I also looked ahead on the schedule, and if he starts every fifth game, and we don't think Adam Wainwright's going to be back for a while, if he does start every fifth game, his schedule is reasonable. It's not amazing, but it's definitely good enough to give him a chance to really break out.
We move to a guy who certainly confounds me consistently year to year, week to week. Gio Gonzalez is having a brilliant year. His ERA, even as we approach the end of August, is 2.39. He's got 12 wins. He's got 150 strikeouts. With that said, his WHIP is very good, but not as good as that 2.39 ERA. His strikeout rate is certainly good, but not superstar good. I look at that, and I'm sort of two minds, because on one hand, look, there's 6 weeks left in the season. He's done it for 20 weeks. Why wouldn't he do it for six more weeks? On the other hand, I look at the ratios. I look at the strikeouts, and I see, you know, a two. And to me, the ERA is the number that is out of line with all of the rest of his numbers. So, you know, I would rather be selling Gio Gonzalez to somebody who thinks they are going to get ace production than picking him up and thinking I can get ace production over the final 6 weeks. Which side of a move like that would you rather be on?
Yeah, I would rather sell, and I know that's not possible in a lot of leagues because there are trade deadlines, but there are some leagues that have trade deadlines at the end of August. I'm in some of those leagues, and I know some of our listeners are as well. And yeah, when you look at that 382 FIP, and the 246 BABIP, like 246 BABIP is just not really sustainable. And you're right, it's so late in the season that he may just do this for five or six more weeks and just this is his career year. But really, that's an ERA that probably should be at least in the mid-threes and a WHIP that should be in the, like, over 1.20, somewhere in the 1.2s. So, and that makes him a solid starting pitcher, but nothing close to an ace. And if owners could jump off, I think that would be a decent idea. If I was going to say one thing in favor of Gonzalez, it's that in September, teams typically play a lot of divisional games. And when I look within that division, I'm happy to start him against the Mets. I'm fine with starting him against the Braves. I'm willing to start him against the Marlins, and I'm eager to start him against the Phillies. So maybe he can just outpitch his peripherals for a few more weeks and just overachieve all the way through the end of the year. And then he's just someone to avoid in next year's draft because other people in your league draft him too high based on that ERA from the year before.
We will move to closers in just a moment. But before we do, I want to take a minute to tell you about the MLB Pipeline podcast, which focuses on all things draft and prospect related. MLB Pipeline's draft and prospect gurus, Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo, join Tim McMaster each week to talk about what's going on in the universe of MLB's future stars. Last week featured an interview with one of the brightest of those future stars, recent number one overall draft pick Royce Lewis. To hear about how Lewis is adapting since joining the Twins rookie league team, search for MLB Pipeline in Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts and click subscribe. Now let's talk closers. The Giants are one of those teams we talked about a lot this year. They remain a little bit confusing to me. But is Sam Dyson the guy for the rest of the year now?
I think he might be, or at least for the foreseeable future. I would be shocked if Mark Melancon is not their closer at the start of next season. But it really seems like they're pretty comfortable with Dyson as their closer right now and just using Melancon in lower leverage situations. That makes me wonder if Melancon is 100% healthy. At the same time, why would you have someone who you have so much invested in still pitching if he's not, like, when you're out of the race, if he's not 100% healthy? But I think Dyson could just hold the role for another month. Do you think that's possible?
I think it's possible. I just think it's weird. I mean, that's the main thing is I don't understand it. I mean, unless their hope is to build Dyson's value and flip him in the offseason, Melancon has you know, the thing that makes it so weird to me is that Melanson has shown no signs of rust since coming back. He's been outstanding. He has been, I don't have the month-by-month splits here, but just eyeballing his game logs, he's been better in August than any previous month this season. So it's mostly just baffling to me. I don't understand what the thought process is there, and that is the one thing that makes me a little bit nervous. You know, that's the one thing that makes me kind of say, well, I look at this and it doesn't add up, and I'm not stupid. So, you know, it makes me wonder if this is really something that continues. But for now, there's no indication that it won't. So here we are.
This is, I think it's a great, if you, I don't talk about handcuffing closers a lot. It's not usually something I'm a big fan of because it uses up valuable roster space. But if you're a Dyson owner and the saves are really valuable for you down the stretch, I think putting Melanson on your bench, if he's not owned in your league, and he really shouldn't be if you're in a shallow league, I think that this is one of the few handcuff situations, because you're right, Melanson hasn't allowed a run since he came off the DL. He hasn't walked a batter since he came off the DL, and in his last three outings, he had two strikeouts in each one of them. So he's pitching like a closer. They just seem pretty comfortable with the status quo right now, but at some point, they have to acknowledge that contract probably and put him back in the ninth inning.
I hinted at this a little earlier. It's been fairly chaotic in the late innings for the Cardinals. Trevor Rosenthal now out for the year. Is Sungwan Oh the guy, or will he become the guy? There's been some thought about Matt Bowman. I guess they could look at Lyons. It's really unclear what they do. And this is a team that's not just in a race, but in a scratching and clawing for every win kind of race. So they don't really have the luxury of figuring this out. Is there anybody you are buying on in that Cardinals bullpen?
Not really. If I was really stuck, I guess I would pick up he came in and bailed them out and got a save the other day. But then last night, he comes in when they have a four-run lead. He comes in to start the eighth inning, and he faces two batters, and he doesn't get either one of them out. And then he's out of there, and that's not how you use the guy you just put back in the closer's role. So I think this is a committee right now. I think O's the best chance, but he just hasn't looked like the pitcher, you know, that he was last season. Like Matthew, how desperate would you have to be for saves to pick O up right now?
I just have to know. It's not even that to me at this point. It's just I got to see him do it. I got to see somebody. There's no pitcher in that bullpen that I like enough right now that I would be comfortable picking up without seeing them get a couple of chances in a row and being confident he's the guy. There's nobody that I like the pitcher enough that I would be willing to put up with the uncertainty of the opportunity before it gets there. We go to the White Sox, and we talked about them a couple of weeks ago, and it looks like, you know, we were both sort of in a position of, I don't really see anything to like here. Is there somebody to like now?
There's still not really anyone I like, but Juan Manaea does seem to be their closer. So I kind of view Manaea the way I viewed Clifford, previously, where if you really need saves, he is actually their closer. So I could make a case for picking him up over anyone in the Cardinals bullpen, just because it seems that he'll get all the save chances. As long as he doesn't blow them, he'll get all the save chances going forward. Now, this is someone with a mid-4s ERA. He's going to totally be a one-category asset, and he's on a team that is probably going to only average about, you know, two or two and a half wins a week, the rest of the way. So he might only be about a one-save-a-week type closer. But in a 15-team league, I could pick him up. Anything deeper than a 15-team league, I'm not picking him up. But as I said, I might pick him up before any of those Cardinals relievers. Would you take him over O or anyone else in the Cardinals bullpen?
I would, just because of my confidence in the opportunity. Not certainty in the opportunity, but confidence. In our notes here, you nailed something I think I said exactly verbatim in a Slack chat at some point earlier this month. What is Mike Socha thinking? And I don't have an answer for that. It looked like Cam Bedrosian had emerged as the guy. He seems like the guy they want to be the guy in the long run. He's the pitcher who most looks like sort of what you want a ninth inning pitcher to be. And then suddenly he's pitching the seventh. and Mike Socha is not exactly a forefront of the analytics revolution kind of manager, so I don't think this is a matter of some new put your best pitcher in the highest leverage spot. And it might even be Bud Norris again, of all guys. I say the same thing here that I said about the Cardinals a little bit ago. Until I see somebody as establishing himself and consistently getting a few in a row, there's nobody I'm picking up there, which is frustrating because Bedrosian looked like a pretty good option. Is Bedrosian still worth holding to you? I think is the only question, because I don't think I can in good conscience tell anybody to pick up Bud Norris again after the disaster of his last few times closing.
No, I don't think anyone. I'd pick up Manaea before I'd pick up Bud Norris, I think. I don't think I can go back to Norris. As far as Bedrosian, now I'm trying to compare Bedrosian in my head to Manaea and to O. I might still take Bedrosian just because I think he's a much better pitcher. And in those high-leverage situations, like, for example, in the series in Baltimore, he didn't get a save, but he did get a win because he was used in that tight game, pitched well, came out with a win. But, I mean, his last outing was in the seventh inning of a lopsided win over the Rangers, and it was a lopsided lead when they brought him in. And that's, again, not what you do with your closer. So I think it's fair to say that he's probably not their closer, but I don't think it's really Keenan Middleton right now either. Maybe it's Norris, but I don't trust Norris enough. Also, I think maybe to drop Bedrosian, because I could also see a scenario where Norris blows another save chance and then they go back to Bedrosian. I think that's possible as well.
Yeah, it's just another one of those where I'm honestly just in a wait-and-see mode. The Mets announced today that Jeurys Familia will be activated for tomorrow night, which is to say Friday's game. They have been pretty clear all along that they anticipate Familia returning to the ninth inning relatively quickly. I can't buy on him until I really see that he's right. And it's less about the opportunity to me, because I do believe that if he's right, the opportunity will be there, and more about just this was a weird and significant injury. This was not your standard. It's not even a standard. apologize for saying this. Not even a standard elbow surgery. This is an unusual thing. So I'm really skeptical on what Familia will be when he returns. And in fact, I'm probably holding on to Ramos until I see clearly that Familia has usurped him. How do you see the Mets situation?
Yeah, okay. So first of all, I totally agree with you that I'm holding on to Ramos. And this actually reminds me, I got a bunch of questions on Twitter when Melanson came back from owners saying, can I go ahead and drop Sam Dyson right now? And I'm not even the world's biggest Sam Dyson fan, but for most of those owners, I said, well, why don't you just wait a week or 2 weeks? Just wait until you see that he's not the closer and then drop him. And I feel the same way for sure with Ramos. I would not drop Ramos for any of those, you know, Manaea, Bedrosian, Bud Norris, anyone that we've talked about in the last few minutes. That being said, I would probably pick up Familia over those other players just because I could see, if Familia is healthy, I could see him clearing that tier quite quickly, because I think they do want him back in the ninth inning. So I'm willing to pick him up. I wouldn't put him in my lineup, but I'd be willing to pick him up and stash him just in the hopes that in a week or 10 days, I've got a full-time closer who's been quite successful. But really, I mean, this is someone who will be watching his first two or three outings very closely to see if the velocity's there, if the control's there, to see if this is someone who looks like the player that we saw, you know, the past two seasons. And it's really up in the air. I would pick him up on the chance that he's ready, but I wouldn't want to bank on it.
Kevin Herrera dealing with a little bit of an injury worry. Who do you like there? Maurer, Buchter, somebody else?
Probably Maurer, just because he has the closer experience. I mean, it's disappointing that Joaquin Soria is on the DL right now, because he would have been the obvious one and maybe would have already slid in there just to give Herrera a little bit of a break if Soria was available right now. But the Royals haven't put Herrera on the DL, so I'm not going to go ahead and pick up Maurer yet. But I think I would be ready to do that if we see that news in the next few days.
Is Greg Holland in any trouble in Denver? And more importantly, should he be in any trouble on your fantasy roster?
I think he is. And now I'm going to go back to something that we talked about in the offseason when he joined the Rockies. And we both talked about the difficulty of being
the closer for the Rockies for 6 months, and that just is a really stressful environment to pitch in at home, and even the travel going back and forth between the home and the road and trying to keep your arsenal intact in those very different environments, and that it can wear pitchers down. And Holland got off to such an awesome start that it made us both look like we were just way too negative on him. But now, I don't know, maybe we're seeing that home environment catch up with him. Maybe we're seeing just the rigors of 6 months of a major league season catch up with someone who's coming off, you know, a long layoff. I don't know, but I'm definitely worried. I would be interested in stashing Pat Neshek, who's pitched really well this season all along. He's right-handed. I think he's the obvious guy to slide in there. I wouldn't be surprised if Holland needs a break at some point. I know they say they're still committed to him, but if you owned Holland, would you be comfortable starting him in your lineup next week?
Well, I don't have it in front of me. Are they at home or on the road next week?
I'm pretty sure they're at home next week.
I think that's sort of where I am right now, is that I would probably be comfortable starting him for a week on the road and not at home.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd be really worried. A couple of his recent blow-ups have been on the road. One was at Cleveland and one was at Kansas City, and a couple have been at home. I would love to sit him down. Like, you're definitely not dropping him. Neshek is the one, though, that Jake McGee's been just okay in the second half. I'm more interested in Neshek as far as a boomer bust, pick him up, stash him for a week and see what happens, than pretty much any reliever we've talked about in the last few minutes. Just because I could see a scenario where Holland blows his next save, they pull him out of the role for a while or put him on the DL, and then Neshek just gets to roll with it for a little while.
I would be more comfortable with, I think, Manaea, just because of my confidence in the role. But broadly, I agree on the pitcher. I just, at this point, you know, the ratios are not going to make that much of a difference for a lot of people. You know, the difference between a 2.5 and a 3 ERA or a 1 and a 1.2 whip for a reliever over 9 innings is probably going to make less difference than the number of saves. I make my decisions much more on the role than on the pitcher at this point in the season.
So would you say, now wrapping up, put a bow on everything we've talked about out of, Manaea, Bedrosian, Bud Norris, Mauer, Neshek, is Manaea probably your favorite from that group?
Of those guys, yes. I might put Dyson a little bit ahead of him, if we're counting him, though he's been holding the job for a while, so he's maybe less available. But I would probably go Dyson, Manaea, 1-2 out of all the guys we've talked about. We move to the two start pitchers, and after some setups that I liked quite a lot, I'm a little less crazy about this week's options. Wade Miley, home for Seattle and Toronto. Ian Kennedy, home for Tampa Bay and at Minnesota. Jose Urania at Washington, home for Philadelphia. Andrew Haney, home for Oakland at Texas. Julius Chacin, home for San Francisco and the Dodgers. Jeff Samardzija at San Diego and home for St. Louis. Edwin Jackson, home for the Marlins and at Milwaukee. I'm not sure there's anybody on there I like a lot. I probably like Urania, just because I like that home for the Phillies so much. Maybe Chacin, because two home starts. But nearly everybody on there, I really dislike either the pitcher or one of the matchups. Who am I missing on there that I should like more than I do?
I know what you mean. So I'll say, first of all, eliminate. I'm totally out on Miley. I'm out on Kennedy. I'm out on Haney. I'm with you on Urania, that I would use him in a lot of leagues. I know he's outpitched his peripherals a bit this season, but fly ball pitchers can do that sometimes. I would use Chacin in a lot of leagues. I think that those two home starts, and he's been pretty consistent this summer, and one of them being the Giants. I would use Samardzija in most leagues. At San Diego and home to St. Louis, pretty nice matchups. He still has that huge discrepancy between his ERA and his FIP, but, I mean, he's someone who's getting you a lot of strikeouts, and his whip's been solid. And I would probably – so I'm probably Samardzija, Chacin, Urania, and then Edwin Jackson's probably fourth for me. I don't know how he's doing it exactly, but he's been pitching pretty well for a team that wins a lot of games, and you've got a home start against the Marlins, that's decent, and then his road starts against the Brewers, and I know it's a tough park, but the Brewers haven't hit well since the All-Star break, so he's probably my kind of middle ground. If I couldn't get one of the first three, Jackson's going to be available in almost every mixed league, so I would consider him.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that. And now comes the time when I step aside. Fred is going to talk with Scott Pianowski of Yahoo Sports. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Please do stick around. Thanks, Fred, for taking the time to talk.
Hey, everybody. So as Matthew said, I'm back now with Scott Pianowski of Yahoo Sports, who I'm going to guess is a little bit busier this time of year than I am with all of his football responsibilities, but he's been gracious enough to give us his baseball brain for a few minutes. How are you doing, Scott?
Doing great, Fred. How are you?
Good. Hey, I've asked you this question before, but I think our listeners would be interested in this. For someone like you who covers fantasy baseball in such depth and covers fantasy football and other sports as well, what time of year do you really start to feel that pull and it's really more of a struggle to stay, you know, as into baseball as you would be the rest of the season?
You know, August is tough because football ramps up, and we also do a lot of hockey. Hockey and basketball actually just opened for Yahoo, so if you're into those sports, if you want to start your leagues already, you can do that. I spent about 2 weeks doing hockey projections and rankings, which was a real challenge because I just am not thinking of hockey right now. I mean, at least with football, they're actually playing games, and, you know, there's news that's generated where the hockey news is a little bit slower, but it's a challenge. I mean, I think you probably talk about this a lot because I think almost any good analyst realizes this. I mean, baseball is definitely, I know it's a marathon, everybody always says that, but it's also just, it's a battle to show up and stay engaged and to turn over your roster every day or every week, depending on your league settings, and just to stay engaged. And what's going to happen, the good news is if you're not at a standing that you like right now, okay, a big chunk of your league is going to check out because they're going to go back to school or they're going to go back to football leagues or they're, you know, just decide, you know, it's not going to happen this year. And I'm not saying that's good or bad. It's just kind of a thing that happens. And so I always feel that if you play the whole 6 months out, if you stay the course, I think there's an excellent chance that you'll be rewarded with a positive tail at the end of the season.
Yeah, and actually that's a great segue into the first topic that I want to do with you today, which is taking a look at players who play the same position and are available in at least 60% of Yahoo leagues, so pretty widely available for our listeners who play in Yahoo formats, and just talking about which one of those players we would rather own the rest of the way, because probably if owners are staying, you know, really tight on their teams, there's a chance to add some of these players who have been pretty productive of late and maybe pick up some points in the standings. So we'll start with the catcher position, and we'll look at James McCann, who's been hitting pretty well in the last month since he's really taken over with Alex Avila gone, versus Wilson Ramos, who has come around a little bit after a slow start since returning from injury. Which one would you rather own?
Yeah, it's been really slow go for Ramos, who you know, we know has the better resume and bat class before this season, but at least he's finally started to show some bite in the last couple of weeks. I think Ramos is a guy, we've just been waiting for him to get back into shape and to get back his timing. And I feel like the last couple of weeks we've seen that. And because his career resume is so much stronger than McCann's, I'm going to go Ramos.
Yeah, and I'll throw out one other name. I noticed when I was researching this that Christian Vasquez is hitting .400 in the last 30 days, which kind of snuck up on me. Would you still rather take Ramos over Vasquez?
I would, because I think Ramos could maybe hit 8 or 9 home runs. Vasquez, to me, is somebody who, he's in a good lineup, albeit at the bottom of that lineup, but I don't see the power potential from him yet.
Yeah, I agree. And now we'll take a look at a couple second basemen. Corey Spangenberg, who was really hot coming out of the All-Star break, cooled off a little bit, but really good overall in the second half, versus Cesar Hernandez of the Phillies, who's been hitting pretty well and stealing some bases in the second half. Which one would you rather own?
You know, the way they're playing the last month, you could say it comes down to needs. Do you need Spangenberg's home runs versus Hernandez's stolen bases? But the thing is, Spangenberg has a background of stealing bases as well. I mean, lately it's hard to steal a base when you're hitting home runs. I don't know where this pop has come from, but if Spangenberg is going to be that dynamic a player, at least in a short sample, I think that pushes him past Hernandez.
Yeah, and then now we'll take a look at a couple third basemen. One is Howie Kendrick, who's actually eligible almost all over the diamond, mm-hmm. but is eligible at third base, and Nick Castellanos. Kendrick's been hitting better. Castellanos, I feel like, gets a little more fantasy publicity. Which one would you rather own?
Yeah, you know, Kendrick, he's been hurt so many times. I don't know that he can handle the exposure of playing every day. Now, I've been saying this for a while, and it hasn't really been right all season, although Castellanos had a big game earlier this week. But Castellanos, a lot of the metrics show that he's really hitting a lot better than his results show, that he's been unlucky in a couple of instances, and he's hitting the ball hard and just doesn't have the results that are commensurate with that. I still think he's a good bet to somewhat get that fixed between now and the end of the season. I'm afraid that by the time this podcast comes out, Kendrick may be hurt again.
And I'll throw out one other one just kind of off the cuff, because a lot of owners don't realize that he's now third base eligible. But would you rather have Brandon Phillips than Castellanos?
Yeah, I think Phillips is safer. It may come down to needs. I mean, we know Phillips is a much better bet for average. So I could see that. I think Phillips would slide above those two guys. It's not a big difference, though.
Yeah, Phillips is one of those players now. I know he was different as prime, but now who just kind of goes along, helpful batting average, you know, 280s, 290s. He's probably going to end up with about 15 home runs, but 15 steals. Like, you know, there is something to be said for just helping a little bit in every area.
I love boring, consistent veterans, too. I think I know this is a little bit different, but in draft season, and apply this to fantasy football, too, the guys who are consistent but just kind of boring players are often tremendous values. I used to call them the Ibanez All-Stars for Raul Ibanez, a guy who didn't do much in his 20s and then had a series of seasons in his 30s that he'd have a great year. People wouldn't really give him credit for it, and you just get him at a nice price the next season. And I guess Brandon Phillips has become an Ibanez All-Star.
Yeah, that's true. Let's go into the outfield now, and a veteran who Matthew and I already talked about today, which is Curtis Granderson, versus a rookie, Rhys Hoskins. Which one would you rather own down the stretch?
You know, sometimes the upside of the unknown can be kind of tantalizing. Hoskins, that really nice power and discipline profile in the minors. He's already hit 7 home runs for the Phillies. Also qualifies at first and the outfield, which is always a nice thing. I feel like we know who Granderson is. I mean, good pop, but, you know, the average could be dicey. It's obviously a plus to be added to that Dodgers lineup. But Hoskins, I don't know, he looks the real deal to me, and I really like his minor league profile, and the eligibility puts it over the top. So I'm going to go with the kid.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about Hoskins, and I actually think his ceiling is quite high. And I do still believe that maybe the ceiling of someone like Yoan Moncada, you know, might be higher, but Hoskins seems like more major league ready to help down the stretch this year. And those are two very different things when we're talking about people who are just playing in those one-year leagues. Sticking with a couple young outfielders, Ian Happ, who's multi-position eligible, but one of them's the outfield, and Manuel Margot. Which one of those young outfielders would you rather have the rest of the way?
I think Margot's a better bet for average. They both have power and speed profiles. I mean, maybe I'm a little bit biased because I'm a Red Sox fan, and I don't know why they let Margot go, albeit, you know, getting Kimbrel was a nice move. But I feel a little bit better about the average. I know that you're making a trade-off with lineups because, you know, the Cubs have a better supporting cast than Margot does. But they both have power and speed. I think Margot just is safer in average and may even get a few more at-bats as Happ bounces all around the Cubs lineup, but we know where Margot will be. I'm going to go with Margot.
Yeah, I think I might as well, and I'm pretty excited about Happ, I think, for 2018 and beyond, like as he establishes himself maybe as a key part of that Cubs lineup and really settles into a spot. But I think I do agree with you that Margot may be a little more safe for playing time down the stretch. Starting pitchers, Colin McHugh, reliable veteran on a team with a great lineup, versus Luis Castillo of the Reds, exciting rookie, on a team that's really rebuilding. Which one would you rather own?
You know, with the rookie pitchers, you're always wondering what happens when they go around the block the second or third time. And I really haven't seen the drop off with Castillo, and specifically his strikeout numbers have stayed robust as well. So we get to do our business in the National League, which is always an advantage, just as long as Castillo isn't getting close to an innings cap. And I haven't heard anything about that. He's still the guy for me.
Yeah, and I'm going to go off our script for just a little minute, and I want to mention Luke Weaver, who Matthew and I have already talked about today, and I'm really high on. I would take Weaver over either one of them, but I think
I'm
heavily in the minority on that. Would you rather have both Castillo and McHugh than Weaver, or no?
Yeah, I'd rather have Weaver. Maybe it's because with Jared Weaver retiring, I need a placeholder in the Weaver family. So,
yeah, I'm a big Luke Weaver fan. I lost out on him in our labor league on a tiebreaker, like on the standings tiebreaker Sunday, which is
you're always going to lose the standings tiebreaker because you're such a good player.
I didn't have a lot of fab left, and I should have bid one more dollar. I was trying to save my dollars, but no matter what happens, if you lose out close, you always think you should have bid one more dollar. So I even tried to trade for him right away, but
that's no dice.
And now I'm going to look at three relievers all at the same time, kind of shaky closers or closers without a lot of track record with their current teams. Brad Ziegler, Alex Claudio, and Blake Treinen. Which one of those do you think can get us, you know, more saves, better ratios down the stretch?
Maybe it's arbitrary endpoints, but I like what Treinen's done with Oakland. 2.21 ERA, a whip just over 1, 23 strikeouts in 20 innings, and his control's been good as well. Claudio just makes me nervous in that Texas environment. And Ziegler, look, we know who he is. I mean, they're going to him in the ninth, and it's great, but he's not going to strike out a lot of guys. I think Trina is in a really good spot right now. Maybe the combination of having a closing job but not being with so much pressure because the A's are you know, not in the race, maybe that's agreeing with him. He's been great since the deal. I'm going to ride with Trinan.
Yeah, Ziegler would be my pick, except I am worried, and Matthew and I have discussed this on this show, I am worried a little bit that they try Kyle Barraclough in the ninth inning, and I don't think Barraclough is a cinch to be a great closer, but there's potential there, and September is kind of the time maybe for Miami to try that. Otherwise, I do like Ziegler, even without the strikeouts, but it's interesting that fantasy owners in shallower leagues could actually build an entire bullpen, you know, an entire relief corps in their 10-team league out of pitchers who are on waivers. Like, all three of those are on waivers in a lot of Yahoo leagues.
Right. It's funny. You can always find saves, right? I mean, the guys are going to emerge because of trades, because of injuries, because of ineffectiveness, whatever it is. There's just so much turnover at that position that, you know, just don't give up, because you can have a bullpen that has no closers, and then all of a sudden you have three.
Exactly. And now that we've talked a little bit about the rest of this season, I wouldn't mind picking your brain a little bit about 2018. Obviously not going to hold you to anything that you say today, but I know some people, and I'm one of them, like to look ahead a little bit as we get later in the season. It's just fun. I don't want to get into, you know, sleepers and busts for next year. It's too early for that, but just a little bit of, you know, some of the studs and the first round type players and which way you're leaning, so we can start thinking about that shifting landscape. So we're going to talk about two players. Which one you believe you would draft earlier in 2018? And we'll start with two starting pitchers, Max Scherzer and Clayton Kershaw.
I know it's odd to say this because they're both in the DL, or they're both dinged up right now, but I just feel better about Scherzer's upside for innings. When you're drafting a pitcher, a vanity pitcher in the first round, I mean, you need as many starts as possible. And Scherzer's durability is, because they're both going to be terrific when they pitch. I just feel better about Scherzer maybe getting through a full season.
Yeah, I think Kershaw is going to be one of the most interesting first-round types next season, just that immense potential. I mean, he almost never pitches poorly versus the risk of losing your first-round pick again to a back injury for a month or more is really tough. So that one to me is interesting. And this next one, Matthew and I have compared these two players on the show before, Giancarlo Stanton versus Bryce Harper, both really good when they're playing, both a little bit injury-prone. Which one would you rather draft?
Yeah, I mean, Stanton was a guy I was avoiding this year, and boy, has that worked out really well.
Yeah.
The thing with Harper, though, is at Harper's peak, I mean, Stanton's having maybe the best season he's ever going to have. If Harper puts together that type of season for him, I mean, he could win the Triple Crown. I mean, you know, he could hit for a really high average. I guess it's hard to trust either one of them to steal bases now, because it's just not worth it with their profiles and with their body types. But because I think Harper has the potential to get to a level that Stanton can't. Now, granted, maybe Stanton can hit more home runs because Harper's always going to walk a ton. And even if there's good stuff around him, I mean, teams just are so careful about not letting Harper beat them sometimes. But I just feel Harper can be maybe a four-category player, and I'm not sure Stanton ever will be.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think it's good to bring up the Stanton injury history, because I'm a little worried if he plays all the way through the season without going on the DL that some people will conveniently forget the injuries from previous years. But that is part of the package with him. And I'm hoping it doesn't, you know, rear its ugly head again, but it's quite possible. Now to third basemen who have underachieved overall this year. One of them surging now, but overall they've both been a little disappointing, and that's Chris Bryant versus Manny Machado.
Yeah, I lean Bryant. Maybe it's because Machado burned me in a couple leagues, and that's the wrong way to make your decisions. But you know, obviously they're right around the same trajectory of their career and at similar ages. Bryant, I don't know if it's the Cubs around him or what it is. I have a pull to Bryant here, and I'm not even sure I have a good reason. Maybe it's I'm letting my Machado experience cloud things.
Yeah, Bryant's hard contact rate is down this year. I just don't think that's something that will continue, you know, from here on out. I think that will come back up next year. I mean, they're both 40 homer candidates. They're both in good environments. I think the Cubs are a little better than the Orioles, or the Orioles have been hitting really well. They've both been hitting well, both teams, in the second half. So I lean Bryant as well. I think a lot of people will lean Machado, but I lean Bryant. And I lean Bryant, I think, a little too heavily maybe in this draft season. So maybe he's just someone that really catches my eye. A couple shortstops, Trey Turner and Corey Seager, who are basically polar opposites as far as Seager just goes along doing his thing, and Turner has these amazing stretches but just hasn't put it together yet for a full season. Which one would you rather draft?
Yeah, I like Seager because of the consistency. And I also like that he has, at this point, more major league experience, which is something that matters to me. I mean, Turner played part of a season last year, obviously unlucky to get hurt this year. Man, think about how good that national lineup could have been if everybody stayed healthy. But Seager, a little bit more experienced. It seems like a little bit more consistent. Maybe it's a matter of making adjustments and just, you know, getting the sense of major league life a little bit quicker than Turner has. They're both great players, but Seager, to me, is a clear preference.
Yeah, I'm a Turner guy. I have a hunch that, but I'm wary of him a little bit. I have a hunch that I'm going to have that late first-round pick in some leagues next year and really be sitting hard on, you know, am I taking Turner? Is he too risky for me? It's going to be interesting. And I don't think anything that he does the rest of the way will really change how I feel about him. I know what he is. He's an amazing base stealer hitting atop a really good lineup who hasn't had a full amazing season yet, so there's still a lot of risk there. And then my last one, they don't play the same position, not even close, but with the landscape shifting, I'm interested in your thoughts on Nolan Arenado versus Chris Sale.
I'm just wired to take the hitter, and obviously a hitter in one of the best environments you can be in. Also a great defensive player, not that you get anything for that. And you'll say, look, I'm a Red Sox fan, so I'm over the moon for Sale. I love his competitiveness. I love that he's going back to getting strikeouts, because for a while it seemed like he wanted to pitch to contact for a few seasons, even though he could strike so many guys out. And now it's just like he just seems mad every time a new batter goes in the box. I mean, he takes it personally. He has the attitude. He's so much fun to watch. But I am hardwired to take hitting early, and I'm not afraid to take a pitcher in the early rounds. And, you know, there's been varying degrees of success. I mean, the guys who took Syndergaard or Bumgarner are still feeling the sting from that, but I just want to stock up on offense. I'm not afraid, you know, maybe 7-8 picks to have a couple of pitchers in there. Maybe they could be third round picks or fifth round picks. But I think Sale has pitched himself into the first round, and I just am uncomfortable going to that territory. I'm going to take Arenado.
Yeah, I'm more willing than most to take a first round pitcher. At the same time, it's really hard to turn down Arenado and how incredibly consistent he's been now for 3 years in a row and durable. And as you said, the environment, the lineup, everything's there in his favor. So while I would take a pitcher in the first round, I'm just not sure if I would take him in front of Arenado. I think maybe the decision-making starts after the first three or four picks next year. You know, whether it's Trout, Altuve, Arenado, Goldschmidt, I don't know. We'll see. But then I think when we start thinking about, you know, hitter versus pitcher, and those are tough calls that we can mostly save for another day. Scott, I want to thank you for being on the show and for giving us some time at a really busy time of the year for you. Good luck with the Yahoo Friends and Family League the rest of the way. You and I are kind of battling it out, although we're battling it out for third place, not first place, unfortunately, I think. But good luck in that league the rest of the way. And good luck with your football drafts that are coming up.
Appreciate it, Fred. Thanks for having me. And you know, as always, I'm glad we're in a couple of leagues together. It's really fun. And I'm sure at the end of the season, I'll see a lot of Zinke near the top of the standings.
Well, we'll see. There's still a lot of baseball to be played. And I'll close things out by quoting Matthew and saying thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks, Matthew. And thanks, Scott, for taking the time to talk.